Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply at LifeMD.com. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
Confused on where to start with weight loss medication? See the lowest prices available with or without insurance for Wegovy, Zepbound, and more at TryLifeMD.com. 95% of LifeMD patients said starting their weight loss journey was simple. Listen to Tara's story after losing 42 pounds.
You just take your shot. It doesn't feel like you're on a diet. What I wasn't expecting it to do was to shut off the food noise. I had gone from 237 to 195. This was life-altering, and if I can do it, I feel like anybody can do it.
Get your free insurance benefits check in minutes right now at TryLifeMD.com. Nearly 96% of patients said they would recommend the LifeMD program to anyone who wants to lose weight. Get started right now at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.
This is Jim Semivan, and you are listening to That UFO Podcast.
I'd like to thank Partner Hero for sponsoring this episode. The world over, outsourcing can get a pretty bad reputation, seen to be exploitative and providing low quality service. That's why Partner Hero's values-based approach raises the bar for the outsourcing industry by investing in employee empowerment and career growth, paying above average market salaries, and maintaining a focus on quality and performance. Offering flexible terms and the ability to scale quickly, which is perfect for startups, quality assurance is baked into every program. Also, with offices around the world, so Partner Hero can offer a truly global coverage, including onshore, nearshore, and offshore options. I know right now in the UFO community, we are all waiting for a delayed report that we feel a certain organization could certainly benefit from Partner Hero's assistance. I myself worked for outsourced companies growing up and had wildly differing experiences, facing many of the challenges that outsourced work brings. That's why Partner Hero's ethics and value-based approach really appeal to me and will to anyone looking to scale up their fast-growing business. So if you are ready to bring in outside customer support help for your startup that feels like it's part of your existing team, check out Partner Hero. Head on over to partnerhero.com/thatUFO to book a free consultation with their solutions team. Mention you heard about Partner Hero from That UFO Podcast and they'll waive the setup fee. Hi everyone and welcome to That UFO Podcast. That's really weird, isn't it? But I'm leaving that in. I don't usually play the audio clips and I've just done it before we record. I usually put those in after. That's still really weird to do. But yeah, hi, Andy here. Yep, it's That UFO Podcast. That's the intro. Dan is joining me laughing in the background. Dan, welcome.
Hi, nice to be here.
Where is here, Dan? Because is this video going to go on YouTube for people to see your background?
Yeah, I guess so. I'm at my mom's house. She's having some work done at the moment. So everything's kind of messy behind me. At some point, you might see a dog come down the stairs, but I'll introduce you to Meg. Everyone loves a good puppy, so.
I was going to say, that's not his mum. and that's also why Dan's audio sounds a little bit different, because he's recording on the fly today. And it's going to be a shorter one than normal, because this is more of an update on the delayed UAP Task Force report, the Arrow report, the AOI-MSG report, the UFO report. I don't know what people are even calling it these days. I don't even remember, Dan.
What was last year's? The preliminary assessment on UAP. That's what it was called. So I guess a second assessment on UAP, maybe?
someone tagged me in a tweet earlier just saying, can we get rid of all this UAP nonsense and just UFO for the win? I was like, yeah, it's the UFO report. That's it.
Yeah, like, let's just say UFO. Yeah. That's what it is.
It'll be a shorter update just on delays and potential reasons it's been delayed, when we may expect it to come out. And also there'll be an interview at the end of this, a short form interview similar to when I had Jay from Project Unity on, with Tom and John from Estimate of the Situation, the new graphic novel based on true UFO events, which you may have heard if you're on the premium stuff. If not, check it out again. It's a short interview, but those guys were really good as well. So stick around for that at the end. But Dan, yeah, so on the 31st of October, we expected the unclassified portion of the whatever the UFO task force was or is still, headed up by Dr. Sean Kirkpatrick, to have an unclassified version released for public consumption. So on the day, everyone was hitting the refresh buttons over and over, weren't they? I think John Greenwald went through 12 keyboards, from what it seems like. Many, many others like yourself are refreshing all day to try and get that scoop, try and get in there first. and nothing. It went dead silent. That was the Friday. 31st of October was the Monday. We'd kind of hoped it may have been out on the Friday to that end of the Newsweek cycle. But yeah, so nothing on the Monday. Halloween came and went. All tricks, no treats. And the week went on. And they say, as people, you know, with the rumours, they online were telling us that it was going to be any day. It was coming out. It was coming out. And here we are almost 2 weeks later. And still no UFO UAP task force report. And that's why we have kind of stayed away from, I mean, you put your countdown on, Dan, but your countdown was literally to this is the date it's meant to be released. That's it.
Yeah.
But we stayed away from the whole, you know, oh, it should be out tomorrow. I've heard sources say, because sources were telling us nothing about when it was going to be out. That was it. So I'm sure people have wonderful sources. I'm sure their sources are spot on some of the time, but sources, it seems, can be wrong. And it's just a case of, you know, just wait and see. It's meant to have been out. It didn't come out. So first off, Dan, what's the scuttlebutt? What are we hearing that it's not came out?
So basically, governmental red tape in a nutshell. I called ODNI, who are actually publishing the report. That's where the report was hosted last year. If you look at the DNI website, it's up there. So I thought, oh, I'll just get in touch with the people who are publishing it and see what they say. And yeah, it's going through a number of approval checks. All the different people need to sign off on it. And it's just a bit delayed. There were rumors that it was submitted and sent back for rewrites and things like that. That's not true. It just hasn't been submitted yet. It's just not ready. It'll be with us when it's with us, but it is coming. So don't fret that it's just disappeared into the ether, into that, you know, that abyss that has been going since the 1940s.
Listeners and our viewers, whatever you may class yourself as, in the US will know you've had big midterm elections on just now, and the US are very much into their politics, as the kids say on the MySpace and the Bebo. but yeah, that's taken up a lot of airtime. So I can see why this wouldn't have been top of the priority or agenda for many news networks anyway, or within the US, this wasn't a top priority to be released, regardless of your interest in the UFO subject. It was probably some bad timing from our point of view, some good timing for other points of view. But I would hasten to say this is likely to be nothing sinister in terms of what's coming out, because even if this did come out by the 31st, Dan, is it fair to say, we talked about our expectations, you're not going to get bombshell stuff coming out in this report. It's still baby steps in terms of it's 6 months, 7 months into Dr. Sean Kirkpatrick heading up this task force. And it's not a lot of time. And if people remember back to the first report that came out, Christopher Mellon, Lou Elizondo, Sean Cahill, and others who were doing the big news media at the time were telling the mainstream news that, you know, it's not a lot of time, 3 months, 6 months, a year. 2 or 3 years are really what's needed at a minimum to produce a comprehensive report. So this is very much the first baby steps and foundations for what would be future reports that might be a bit meatier and more to build on. Not to say there won't be some interesting things in there, which we can talk about, at least one or two things, but it's still temper your expectations, folks, and don't get bought into conspiracy theory territory here, I would say.
Yeah, I would completely agree. Like we've heard tidbits from places like the New York Times, and you know, it seems at the moment to be very much kind of a glass half full, glass half empty approach. The word is that there are over 350 cases, half are solved, half are unsolved. But you know, that's a choose your own adventure type thing, right? We always expected half of them to be solved, or a lot of them to be solved. That's not what we're here for. We're here for the more anomalous stuff. So we'll probably just end up getting a list of stats, and it's up to us to dig through. We have to remember that this office is funded till 2026, as per the NDAA that was signed into law by Biden last year. So this is really chapter two of a 5-6 chapter document that will be historic by the time we're finished. And I think the more encouraging part is that once they put this out, we'll get a response from officials through legislation, closing loopholes and things like that. We're already seeing advancement in that regard. This report won't, if you know, we've spoken about language for this year's NDAA on the show before. And there are certain requirements that they're kind of saying specifically, hey, we're not interested in stuff that's man-made. If it's man-made, give it to the correct department and carry on looking at the more anomalous stuff. That won't apply to this report. That will be passed this year, and that will apply to next year's report. So I would say very much, you know, expect almost last year's report, kind of a redux version. We'll get no doubt a lot in there, but it'll be a do-over essentially because we've had a completely clean house, someone else taking charge, like you said. And yeah, they haven't been writing this report since the 1940s. They've been writing it since March, and it's not a lot of time to tackle it.
Yeah, the number of reports floating about online from many sources were 366. You say they are over 350. And you mentioned the New York Times article that came out from one Julian Barnes seemed to hint at some of the content being half of those reports have been solved and are, as per the New York Times article headline at the time, as I scroll to the top, many military UFO reports are just foreign spying or airborne trash. That's fair anyway. That's what most people would imagine a lot of this stuff is potentially. But to your point, Dan, you said if even half of one thing or half of the other, let's just say if there were 366 reports, to come out and say 365 of them have actually been solved are balloons, Chinese and Russian drones, our own technology being misidentified, misidentified planes, weather phenomena, da-da-da. So yeah, we've solved 365 of them. I mean, there was this one that we cannot, you know, even contemplate what it was doing, and it shot off at an incredible rate of speed toward Mars. But, you know, hey-ho, 365 of them have been solved. That's fine. Let's talk about that one. And this is what we're trying to get at, that it doesn't matter how many are solved. And that's why I thought the tone from Julian Barnes, who is a New York Times journalist, the guy's not a hack, you know, well, I say that, I don't know, but I imagine that's the pinnacle of journalism. The New York Times is pretty high up there. So to go, so I'm going to be quite posh here, Dan, and try this in a Scottish accent, but so laissez-faire with his writing in terms of just throwing out, you know, half of them are solved and it's just rubbish. Yeah, but it's the other half, you know. Yeah. If a movie goes up for 10 Oscars and only wins 5 of them, they're not going to walk away disappointed. They're going to talk about the 5 Oscars they won. This is
you're good with your analogies, man. That's a really good way of putting it.
Analogies for days, unless it's Harry Potter first editions, Dan, in which case it doesn't work. Peek behind the actors cutting there. But yeah, so Julian Barnes had that article, and that upset a lot of people because I think we've come, even though there's only actually been 2 or 3 New York Times articles since 2017 on the UFO subject in a serious big way, people have come to expect big things, or, you know, the famed crash retrieval article. And then this one dropped and it was a little bit of a wind out of the sails for some people, wasn't it?
Yeah, 100%. Everyone was expecting explosive things, and actually this article was really conservative. And for me, the disappointing thing is, you know, fine, Chinese drones are spying on sensitive American locations. That's a huge story. That should be the headline. You know, the airspace is insecure, whether you're looking at drones or whether you're looking at UFOs. And I'll just say that before the midterms as well, Obama put out just a little video kind of telling people to go vote. And he rounded up the 10 things in the past couple of years that the Democrats has done. And I think it was number 4 was he said the UFO report, sorry, I mean UAP report. So that's Obama giving us permission to use UFO instead of UAP. But the fact that it was there means that they're kind of, you know, no one votes on this, but they're pushing it as an issue. And even when Julian Barnes' article came out, there were so many articles in response to that through like NBC, through Fox, through other places, that it just goes to show that so many people are paying attention to this now. It's not going away. Even if Julian Barnes writes an article that kind of puts a downer on the whole thing, it doesn't matter. Like the train is rolling and it's going to go forward, you know. Pay attention to which way the wind is blowing as opposed to the word of one person.
Yes, and as I've learned, Dan, in 2.5 years of doing this, we are not politically affiliated with any parties. You've mentioned a few of the Democratic candidates there. And to be fair, this did also come to fruition during former President Trump's time. So it's gone from the Obama times, and obviously way before that, but you've cited Obama, to Trump, to Biden, and it's still carrying on. So really we hope it is that bipartisan issue that multiple parties can get behind as well. So don't be throwing any hate our way.
worth mentioning as well that the midterms are kind of over now, and all of the people who have been talking about UFOs, like Gallagher, Galejo, Marco Rubio, Gillibrand, all these people, they're still in office. They didn't lose their place. So all of kind of, I would say, the allies to this UFO cause, they're all still in place, and they're all still going to be pushing this going forward.
Yeah, so in terms of the report, Not much has changed, Dan, then, and you're thinking it's going to come out. I mean, it's unlikely to come out today, isn't it? We're recording this on the 10th of November, which is around 4 p.m. UK time, which is 12 p.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific, I believe, because of the time difference just now. So we would have had the announcement of the press junket and stuff like that for announcements. It's probably not going to come out today, and the likelihood would be if it does come out this week, it would be tomorrow anyway, we've kind of thought. But right now there's no indication it's going to be tomorrow or next week.
Should we let's pick a day each, and whoever loses will give a fiver to charity. I'm gonna go for a week tomorrow, I would say.
I'm gonna go tomorrow, Friday 11th.
Tomorrow, cool, nice.
Yeah, my sources tell me. No, I'm joking. They don't. I really hope it comes out now so people get all thingy over that. Yeah, I did ask last week how people were feeling online on social media about the report being delayed. I asked, are you frustrated the UAP Task Force report still hasn't been released? And that was on the 4th of November. 64% said yes, 13% said no, 19% said a little, and the rest said other. And left a comment. And the comments are, as you would expect, the general sarcasm from many of the regulars, so thanks for that. And also, a lot of folks are saying they're not, I think generally, they're not surprised. A mix of elections going on, just a little bit of conspiracy, not in a totally out there way, but, you know, because of the subject, because of the stigma, of course they're going to delay it. They're trying to kind of derail things a little bit. And I can get that. I can totally get that.
That's interesting, actually, because during the midterms they could have buried it. We thought they were going to bury it over a weekend, and actually the midterms have passed now, so there's going to be more of a spotlight on it if it comes out now. So that the argument goes both ways. It's going to be really interesting to see the reaction once this actually drops.
Dan, time for a quick listener question that was sent to me literally as I was waiting on you coming on to the recording.
Oh, cool.
From Brian Lemery. Brian's about a long-time Patreon. Brian asks, Andy, why do you think we don't hear about abductions as much anymore? It peaked from the 50s to the 90s, then dropped off. Anything to do with the introduction of the camera phone? I'm sure I talked about this a little bit with Jay. Christopher
King,
and James Iandoli. So if you'd missed that one, Brian, go back and check that out, because obviously they're members of the Experiencer group. Jay Christopher King's one of the founders, and they're coming back on in a few weeks to talk about their upcoming Anomalous Inquiry conference. It's happening on December 3rd. Dan, you'll be out there with Graham Rendell again. And we've talked about that, and maybe we'll talk about that again. However, for me, I think partly, and I'm just going to think out loud here, Dan, 50s to the 90s, especially from that 80s to 90s period, the UFO subject was confined largely, given there was no social media, to magazines, newsletters, and VHS videotapes that were available in HMV and all that kind of stuff.
VHS, just for the people that are listening?
It was like Betamax.
Nice.
yeah, thanks. I think it was confined to the mainstream. One of the portrayals of the UFO subject was people get abducted and probed. People get abducted and operated on. You know, that was just one of the things. And I think as social media has kind of taken off, and we've started exploring all these different facets and ideas in the UFO topic, I think that one just dropped off. Not to say it doesn't happen. And I think that's something that if you listen to any of the interviews I've done, God, was it earlier this year now, before the summer, with some of the experiencers? I had a few weeks where I had different interviews with a few members of the Experiencer group. If you go back and listen to some of their stories, these are people who are telling you this is happening to them still now. It's just still not an accepted aspect of anything. And again, God, I want to say, Dan, if I've put it to you, do you remember the guest I spoke to that talked about how there aren't many facets of society left where you can claim to have been? Was it Whitley Strieber, actually, where he talked about being raped, which is essentially what his claim is with his experience. And he says, you know, I had a doctor examine me and say I'd basically been raped. And if I say in any society that X, Y, or Z done it, it's a very serious thing. It's a crime. It's reported. You get support. You get help. But if you say it was a non-human intelligence, an out-of-body experience, an alien being, it's a laugh, and it's not treated seriously, and it still happens. So, it's a really complicated and complex conversation still, I think, isn't it? What do you think, Dan?
Yeah, I mean, I totally agree with everything you say there. But it brings to mind Missing 411. I know they've got a documentary coming out about the UFO connection, and that's all about basically people going missing in sites around America, usually near caves or kind of underground systems in national parks. And a lot of people have drawn comparisons between abductions and a lot of those experiences. So with their third movie, they're diving headfirst in and seeing what the connections are. I would also say that, you know, there are clearly people out there, like you say, that are experiencing these things. But also, maybe we don't hear about it so much because they've just gotten better at taking people. You know, I've said before, what if people aren't coming back anymore to tell their stories? We've got to consider it, as crazy as it sounds.
I think even if you take a similar type of discussion, especially in the past, from a point of view when there was no social media, when people would claim to be the second coming of Christ or a reincarnated spirit, you know, that on social media now, because of the volume of people on social media, is amplified. And it's just, you see so much stuff now. You're exposed to so much more than you used to be, just as a person, with the advent and uptake of social media, if you're on there, that I think you become desensitized to it as well. And you just scroll past it. Oh, someone's claiming to be abducted. Oh, someone saw a UFO. Someone's posted a video, probably CGI. And you can just miss really, really obvious things because of hoaxes, because of fake stories, because of lack of context and information. And I think it's just a symptom of the kind of times we live in. But if you've missed those, Brian, or anyone else, go back and listen to those experiencer stories. And especially if you listen to James and Jay's interview from a few weeks ago with myself, and try and catch the repeat of their conference, or even the one that Dan and Graham are going out to on the 3rd of December, which has Christopher Mellon as a headliner with Leslie Kane and others. I think that'll be definitely right up your street in terms of the abduction conversation. Definitely has its place within that setting and those people involved.
I had the pleasure of having a bit of a talk with the Experiencer Group this past Sunday, and I would highly recommend, if people are interested in these experiences and talking to people who talk about them sincerely and seriously, you know, join up to the group, go talk to them. They're a real nice bunch, a real welcoming bunch. There's no judgment. It's just discussing what's on the table, very frankly, you know, almost like at the moment, you know, publicly, the nuts and bolts conversation is happening. They're very much having the same tone of conversation, but about experiences and abductions. So I'd highly recommend popping along to the Experiencer Group and meeting those guys.
Cool. I would hope to be back with Dan recording tomorrow for a breaking news pod discussing the dropping of the report. It might be tomorrow, it might be the following Friday, it could be something in between or after. We just don't know. And when that does drop, we'll be straight with you with an update on that, folks, and what is actually contained within the report. I will leave you now with the guys from Estimate of the Situation, a graphic novel based on the UFO phenomenon. Dan, you picked up a copy from the guys at Comic Con over in New York. I'm waiting on my copy being posted to me, and I believe
you're gonna love it.
Yeah, the link is in the description. I've had the digital copy, so I've read through that. You can still buy a copy of the issue number one, and issue number two is coming out soon, but the link is in the description, as with everything else we've talked about on this pod. And I'll hand over to Tom Orzechowski. You'll hear what about that right at the start of the interview, and John Zoitis. So Dan, thanks for joining us.
Thank you. And enjoy the interview with the guys that are making that graphic novel. It's awesome.
Here they are. Babbel is one of today's sponsors, and they are the best way for you to begin to learn a new language. Immersing yourself in the language of your choice from day one through a whole range of learning styles, including podcasts, games, and online classes. It's available on desktop or through their app. Babbel's courses are created by didactics experts and focus on real-life situations. So if you're holidaying in France and spot a UFO, you can get locals' attention quickly and efficiently. The lessons are as short as 15 minutes and fit into any schedule and can be downloaded to work on offline while on the go. With the help of everyday dialogue exercises and the speech recognition software, learners can practice their pronunciation, and regular vocabulary repetition ensures that what is learned is memorized over the long term. I can already hear some of you listeners getting in touch to tell me I should really learn English given my dodgy accent. When you buy a 6-month subscription to Babbel, you receive 6 months extra for free by using the code AUDIO1. That's AUDIO1, the number one. Pay for 6 months and learn for a whole year. Get info and redeem the code at babbel.com/audio. Folks, today is the day you finally decide to make a life-changing decision and learn that new language. Joining me now on this week's breakdown are the authors of Estimate of the Situation, the fantastic graphic novel recently launched for you to purchase and buy. I've got my copy already virtually and it is fantastic, and I really wanted to speak to both authors on the podcast. Finally joining me after a couple of reschedules all on my part are Tom Orzechowski and John Zoitis. Oh wait, Orzechowski. I fucked it up, didn't I?
It's fine, dude. I fuck up my own name.
Oh my god. Like, yeah. Okay. I might even just leave that in. Tom Orzechowski, yeah. And John Zoitis, after I have just literally asked you how to pronounce that, says the guy called McGrillin that no one can pronounce. So, and I also have to mention it is beautifully illustrated as well by Ezekiel Anastasia. So yeah, I have to get that in there because it does look phenomenal. Welcome both of you to the podcast.
Thanks, man. Thank you for having us.
Yeah, man, happy to be here. It's been a long time, and we're just like we're finally happy to have that out in the wild.
Yes. Listen, I'm going to read the synopsis first because this isn't just any old graphic novel or book on UFOs, and it's really interesting. So, based on declassified documents and extensive historical research, Estimate of the Situation is an exploration into the beginning of the UFO phenomenon and the US military's response in the wake of World War II and the growing threat of Russian aggression. Sounds a bit familiar, doesn't it? Following the trend of smarter sci-fi and dynamic approach to storytelling, Estimate of the Situation delivers a fascinating, mysterious, and compelling story while staying true to our historical understanding of the UFO phenomenon. Tom, let's kick off for yourself. Where did this whole idea come from?
Man, where to start? So, I mean, I feel like it started with just me kind of like peeling back documents and trying to figure out what happened in that time period, because I kept coming across conversations with people, and you know, like when you believe something and you're not necessarily equipped to talk about it, the conversations you have kind of they falter quite a bit. So I went back to like the beginning. I wanted to find out what happened in the beginning. How did this phenomenon get started? You know, when we know Kenneth Arnold kind of set it off, but how did the government respond? And like, is there something to it? So as I, you know, dug deeper and deeper, I got really enamored with Project Sign, which was the first government inquiry into the UFO phenomenon. And it just, there was just like a compelling story in there, in a team of like engineers, intelligence officers, scientists who really, you know, as McCoy would later say, like this was the one of the most serious studies into the UFO phenomenon by the government. Like they threw everything they had at it to find out the answer. And it's an interesting kind of a journey, because they go through this journey of, okay, well, you know, is this a domestic project? It's not a domestic project. Are these Russians, you know, under the backdrop of this Cold War that was forming? So that kind of, you know, had them running around for a year, but they ultimately came to this conclusion that, okay, it's not domestic, it's not Russians, but it's out there and it's not one of ours, right? And that whole journey of these engineers and intelligence officers investigating this and coming to what was known as like what the extraterrestrial hypothesis, I thought was very compelling. And I couldn't believe that, you know, no one really talks about this, because this is our own government who funded this and came to this conclusion, which later caused some trouble like over at the Pentagon. Once we found that there was a compelling story there, I mean, me and John, we're storytellers. Like this is kind of like what we do. We've been doing our whole life. And, you know, this was the first project where I think, because we've been trying to work on something together for a while, where I think there was a passion into like really like digging into the research and finding out what happened and turning that into a narrative story, using the characters, using the dates, using the events, right? So that's how it got started. And it just kind of snowballed from there. And, you know, John has a really interesting take too, because John, unlike me, wasn't necessarily a believer in a lot of this. And once he dug into the research, now he'll tell you like, all right, Tom, I still don't agree with you on some things, but something definitely fucking happened, you know? And I'll leave that to John.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't have a strong opinion one way or another. I wasn't in the UFO lore like Tom was. I mean, it was always, we've had conversations about it in the past, but, you know, he basically brought me the idea of the project, and he had already sketched, he already gotten some art done and basically had a, had a rough issue written. And so I came on and, yeah, I guess I came from a more objective point of view just because I hadn't been, this is all new to me. But yeah, the more I my original inclination, my intuition was, okay, there's probably an explanation for these things. And then the more you look into it, the more complicated it becomes. And then it becomes exceedingly obvious that these things were flying around. Something that virtually no one denied. I mean, that isn't what this story is about, is the government. Well, there's public denial, but certainly internally, there's no denial that these things were real. Where the denial and the confusion and the disagreements come in is to what these things actually are. And, you know, there are conclusions that are diametrically opposed within the military during this time. I mean, there's a reason why. So it's about, like Tom mentioned, Project Sign. It takes place basically over a year and a half, right, mm-hmm. from Kenneth Arnold's first UFO sighting, which wasn't the first, but it was the one that sparked the cultural phenomenon, to when Project Sign ended. You know, not a very, you know, Project Sign was only technically established not long before it ended, and it ended for specific reasons that obviously we'll get into. Don't give too much away, but basically, there were certain conclusions that certain people disagreed with.
So what you've both done was use legitimate documents and a true story to base your work on. It would have been very easy for you, especially in a first issue, to have little green men, flying saucers, action panels. Was there ever a thought to do that? Or was it always the idea that, no, it's going to be straight to the point, it's going to be factual based? My friend Graham Rendell, who writes a lot of historical deep dive books into the UFO history back in the 40s and 50s, would absolutely love that you've stuck to your guns on this. Was there ever the notion to move away from that and get a little bit Independence Day?
That's a really good question. I think in the beginning, it was pretty much kind of like, okay, this the phenomenon, the UFO phenomenon specifically, has been represented in media, I think, really poorly. You know, you always have like this cheesy X-Files music. You have, you know, these big bug alien Independence Day invasions like you're talking about. So I personally wanted to make something that I wanted to read and watch. And for me, that's something rooted in, you know, historical accuracy, really tells you the story, the people involved. So that we never wanted to deviate away from that. And there's one scene in issue one where, you know, it stretched a little bit to the max where we would absolutely stretch a scene behind what happens behind closed doors. And that was a point of contention for a little bit. But like that was a welcome point of contention, because now, you know, like we have these principles and we have these standards. So it's nice to kind of stick by our guns, like you said. I mean, it's so easy to again, include like little green men and all these like far off, like crazy invasion ideas, but that's just not interesting to me, you know? And I don't think that's interesting to John either. It's the actual, like the story itself is so, it's so bizarre and compelling. You don't need to exaggerate, which is, you know, blows my mind.
Yeah. I mean, it's not even a matter of not having enough to talk about. It's having too much and trying to focus in on the most important, basically, checkpoints, which drives the length of time that we're covering. Yeah, I mean, in terms of Little Green Men, I mean, for example, like, you know, Roswell happens during this time. We don't tackle Roswell head on, but it's really hard to, it would be really hard, because just to jump ahead a little, like we're thinking about doing, tackling Roswell specifically after this, it would be really hard to tackle Roswell without jumping to conclusions, potentially crazy ones, in order to tell that story. But this story, because we're able to tell it from the perspective of these military people, these engineers, these scientists, who are basically going, you know, the sense is to go through their eyes, is to see it through their eyes, because they are also trying to figure out what's going on. So we're with them in on the mystery, as opposed to actually trying to tell a mystery, like, you know, hey, here's a mystery. We're going to give you the answer to the mystery. So we do. And like Tom said, I find that's the more compelling story to tell too. Obviously we got to take certain creative liberties because we don't know what these guys talked about. And what's interesting too, is some of these guys, you would think there'd be more information on them. And there's not. No. We have to do a lot of digging for some of them, even though like a few of these guys were very important in world, like very heavily involved in Operation Paperclip, for example, are essentially a star of the series. Alfred Ludding was a brilliant rocket engineer. I mean, like just among the most brilliant they had in the military working for them, a civilian engineer, one of the first actually civilian engineers that the military hired. And so, yeah, I mean, we have the, it's just incredible how little we tend to know about them, almost as if the history has been either hidden or suppressed or not well told. So we're trying to correct the record on that. But for the most part, the idea is it being a fact-based story as much as we can be.
Yeah, I just want to jump off that real quick and like give a shout out to Wendy Connors, who she passed away earlier this year, where she was one of the old school researchers who like literally like I was, you know, we hit up a bunch of like quote unquote OG researchers to kind of figure out the details of the story and the people involved. And Wendy Connors was one of them. And we had a bunch of email correspondences with each other where she sent me an archive of interviews that she had done with Alfred Ludding's son, you know, and even like Albert Dyerman's son. Right. So the sons of the people involved with Project Sign talking about their fathers and what they knew and what they heard. So that's like kind of the extent of just the research that we were doing. But like, you know, without these people, it'd be impossible because like we're using so many resources from people who have completed the historical record. And for me, that's really important because, you know, we want people to read this and walk away with an idea of what happened and who was involved. Because this is such a, I mean, I think it's an amazing point in time, you know, for not just our history, but like the UFO phenomenon in general. Like it's, to me, it's still kind of crazy how people don't talk about it as much, you know, when this was just all over the country at the time.
You're talking about a time that was, you're 7 or 8 decades away from social media being the conglomerate or the monster that it is. And some of these folks would have probably been on social media had it been of the time. And people maybe don't realize how lucky they are having the heads of serious government UFO programs available to DM now on Twitter or speak to on Instagram or to Reddit AMAs. And some people don't know what they've got with that sort of access until it's not there. And I think that's the mystique sometimes of some of these people, that they are so elusive and mysterious and their backgrounds are just, they're just not there because there wasn't the same records kept. There was no computerization. There was no Twitter or there was no forums to discuss this in. So it's stuff that you really have to dig into and drag up. And I think it's what's really interesting is that the medium that you're using isn't widely used at all to reach that UFO audience. Sure, there's kind of superhero comics and there's alien based comics and all that kind of stuff, but a real serious approach that you guys are using with the graphic novel / I'll say comic format, do you think this can catch the imagination of an audience or demographic that others haven't yet? And what I mean by that, hopefully, is I'm getting this a point across. Can you pull people into the UFO subject, maybe like John, who didn't have an interest before? Or do you think it's going to primarily be aimed at the folks who already have that interest?
I mean, my hope is for the latter. I mean, for both, right? We want people who know this subject to really be like, oh, wow, let me sink my teeth into this. And they'll come away with, like, hopefully a better understanding of what happened. Also, just be entertained with a compelling story. But yeah, part of it is, and I hate using the word Trojan horse, but it's a way to Trojan horse this kind of information into, like, hopefully a wider appeal, where now you see, you know, like every 3 years or so that the buzz kind of comes up. Someone sees them, like a Nimitz video gets released, or there's a congressional hearing and people start getting interested. And really, like, when they do, what are the resources they have to kind of go and find out more about something like this, right? So I'm hoping to really kind of capture a wider appeal of, even if we start with sci-fi fans, something like that, and then for them to read this and come away thinking, holy shit, that happened? Let me go actually double check that. They said that, you know, there's this document here that says this, this, and this. Let me go see if I can Google that or research it or find it myself and lead them down their own rabbit hole, you know, which I think ultimately for me is would be awesome. And I think, like, you know, like John said earlier, we just want people to enjoy like a really compelling story. you know.
Yeah, and just jumping off that, I mean, this is part of why I think we find this period of time so interesting and why we're telling the story in the way in which we are. It's the idea of bringing on people who might either be skeptical or not have an opinion on the UFO phenomenon, and we're not stuffing our conclusions, what we may feel, down their throat. I mean, just to be full disclosure, I still don't know what these are. But at very least, or still should say, obviously no one does to an extent, but I don't have a strong opinion on what they are. I have ideas, but I'm not necessarily leaning one way or another. But even the idea of being skeptical of whether these sightings are real, those are the type of people that I think reading this story can really find a compelling narrative that can actually draw them in. And then for the UFO community already, people in that community, hopefully, you know, we'll do right by the history and they'll see that.
Yes.
But also maybe they have skeptical friends, family, and be like, okay, listen, I'm not going to tell you a spiel or give you a story about, you know, the green aliens walking around, but why not take a look at this book or this story, which takes a more measured, fact-based approach and tell me what you think. So I think Tom is right. It is a bit of a Trojan horse in that way, where we're trying to be skeptical too. I mean, that's the idea. We're coming from a place of skepticism when we're telling this story. We're not trying to take anything for granted, which is why we've done so much research.
John, I can respect that you've not made a decision yet. And to be fair, I haven't, and my own opinion changes and is very fluid. And I would always recommend to anyone, you know, listen to everyone, but make up your own mind is what I try and say to folks. And depending on the time of the year and maybe some of the stuff that's floating about online and maybe the narrative other people are kind of going at, and you hear different people's opinions and it makes you go, maybe it is more of this, or maybe it is some of this, or actually I've never considered option E or F or G before. It's always been A, B or C. And that's a really interesting thing. And what I love about the subject as well, that it doesn't have to be one thing and it can be what you make of it as well. And right now, not many people, if anyone, actually do know. So that's the beauty of this subject, I think, and what people can sometimes forget to fall out of love with it a little bit. But I wanted to talk about feedback on the initial issue, and I just literally came across this a few minutes ago. Chase Howard, who does some producing for the Roswell Daily Record podcast and others, put some lovely feedback for you and just finished EOTS_comic, which is your Twitter handle, and it lives up to the hype. When does the next one come out? Seriously going to read through it a few more times to catch all the details. Love the artwork and the way the story is told. Interesting that they've seen it and read it as it's layered. There's so much information within there. Is that something that you both planned in writing, that you wanted people to maybe find little Easter eggs or things are going to miss first time round and they can dive back in and kind of get that second and third reading out of it?
Yeah, I mean, we included copies of real documents in there, like the Kenneth Arnold report, the Armstrong report. And like we will mention certain things along the way where people do pick up. Again, they can take that piece of information, research it even further, and go down this whole rabbit hole. And, you know, like the feedback has been, you know, thank God it's been great. We were a little nervous sending it out there, you know, and, you know, feedback at Comic-Con was great. People, I think, are really hungry for something that, again, takes a more measured approach, like John was saying, something that, like, doesn't shove an opinion down their throat, but says, hey, take a look at this, because this is a little strange, right? And just people, like, on Twitter, you know, honestly, like, a lot of our sales have come from Twitter, and people just, they like it. They seem to like it. I'm glad, because I know the expectation sometimes is when you open up a UFO book, you want the UFO over, you know, the Capitol building or something like that, you know, and this is not that. So it's really relieving to kind of just kind of hear that, I would say, like, good feedback, you know, makes us want to do more, you know, at the same time. So, like, I mean, the second issue comes out in the middle of December. That's what we're aiming for. We're currently, this wall behind me is a little bare because we're getting ready to start plotting out every single point for issue two. It's just, you know, it's a grind, but at the same time, like, you know, we wouldn't be doing it if, like, we didn't really, just believe in the story, you know, and believe in the message that we're trying to put out.
And there's a limited run for issue one as well. So I would suggest, folks, if you want a copy of it, I'm going to be tweeting this out as soon as we finish the recording. And then this recording will go out a few days after that, maybe a week or so after. I would suggest you get your copy now if you're going to get it before they run out. There are digital copies available worldwide, but I'm right in saying at the moment it only ships to the US. Is that correct?
Yes. So right now it only ships to the US. And this is, again, because we're so small, we're figuring out logistics in terms of, you know, shipping overseas, a digital version. And basically this version, we have 100 out. And what this does is help us just build for the next issue, right? So it helps us continue the series. And we, you know, like eventually we see this becoming like a major run. So these issues we're hoping will appreciate in value and give something back to the community in terms that way for people. But it's just like, it's a very limited run. It's black and white. I honestly prefer black and white to the color, even though the color looks amazing. And then later down the road, we're going to have more of like a bigger release, hopefully. Again, we're literally two guys trying to figure this out. It's our first graphic novel. So it's been kind of a learning experience, but at the same time, again, like we're thrilled with the reception.
What is the future of the project then? We'll come to John then for that one. What is the grand plan that you get those 100 issues sold? That helps you fund the next. It's a bit of a Kickstarter, a bit of a fundraiser, because if people buy it and it helps you get the money to make the next ones, you can get more of them sent out. You can send it internationally. Where do you hope the project can go?
So we probably shouldn't say this, but like we are having talks with people who are interested in the quote unquote, the IP itself. And they're interested in translating into like the silver screen. So ultimately we do see this as like a movie, right? But until then we're going to do this right, where it's, you know, a 6-issue run, possibly 8 issues. And we're going to tell the story from A to Z, and we're just going to try to tell it as authentically as we can, you know? And again, we're just trying to make things that we want to see, that we want to read, and hopefully others do too. And at the same time, kind of walk away with a little bit more understanding of like what happened in that time period. But a movie for sure. You know, that would be I'm so tired of just the horrible UFO movies out there.
Yeah. John?
No, I'll just say agree. But in the short term, and I know Tom agrees with this too, it is about just making a great graphic novel. We also are nerds at heart, and we also love graphic novels. I think that is part of why Tom chose that medium. Potentially onto bigger things in the future, but it's just bootstrapping this thing so we can, you know, we really just, it really is truly a passion project. And it's really about getting out those issues.
Let me ask you in wrapping up, we'll start with you, John, and then come to yourself, Tom. If someone picks up their copy of Estimate of the Situation, they read through it and they kind of put it down, take a sip of their coffee, what do you want that one thing to be they take away from it?
I would say, let's assume they're a skeptic. Like, oh, maybe there's something here. I wonder what happens next. You know what I mean? So it's something that compels them, not only enjoying the story, but also just a light hook into maybe opening up their mind towards actually stepping into this phenomenon and joining us for the ride. You know, basically they want to join us on the ride to the mystery with us.
And yourself, Tom?
I mean, John nailed it. Like when he said, we hopefully this will open people's minds up to the phenomenon and to kind of take it more seriously. But on the flip side, to those who are already familiar with it, you know, let's say they read the first issue and they put it down to drink their coffee, I want their first thought to be, I fucking knew it.
I like that. What I'm going to do, I'm going to get this straight onto the premium feed. So if you pay for the podcast through Apple Podcast, any of that good stuff, Patreon, Spotify, etc., you'll be hearing this separate to the breakdown episode. So you're probably going to hear it at least a week in advance. So you lot, go and get your copy of issue one while they still last. They might be gone by the time you hear this. And then if you're hearing it on the breakdown, you definitely have even less time to get your copy. So make sure you do that, and also get in there for issue two as well when it becomes available. I'll just ask to finish off, Tom and John, how can folks follow you, both of you, and how can they pick up the work as well?
Oh, so they can follow us on EOTS_comic on Twitter, Instagram estimate of the situation, and our website blacktielabs.nyc. And honestly, if people use the hashtag estimate of the situation or hashtag EOTS when they do get their copy and just kind of like say a couple words about it, whether you liked it or you didn't, it helps us tremendously because at this moment, you know, again, we're just two guys who kind of meet up in a coffee shop and then fucking spend like 4 hours going over documents to tell a story. So any word of mouth is appreciated.
Awesome. And both of you, listen, it'd be great to have you back on when issue 2 is launched. I can't wait to get my physical copy. I've read the digital copy. It's fantastic. It's not a quick read in the sense that, oh yeah, you can breeze through it, but it flies by. It's beautifully illustrated again by Ezekiel. So well done. Great job on that. And both of you, it's really top work. And you Thank remind you. Me of two young Graham Rendles, if that's a compliment. I'm sure it is for many folks. So.
I love Graham. I mean, we sent him the digital copy too, so I'm waiting for him to give us his thoughts on it because he's so historically accurate in his own work. But I just have a question. Did you have a favorite scene that like really set out for you?
Do you know what it was? And this is really odd because I don't smoke, but anytime you had the characters smoking, it just reminded me of like the X-Files kind of scenes. And you know, towards the end with like the smoking man stuff. And I don't know if that was a deliberate thing or not, but it was like reading the X-Files in a Watchmen type format when it comes to graphic novels. So I like that stuff. And again, I could quote it because I've got it open tier, which is really bad. I didn't really plan for you to ask me my favorite scene, you know, but right at the end. I got straight to everyone smoking. Yeah. You know, it was a, let me ask you then, what's your assessment? And, you know, like I said, the man wasn't lying. He saw what he said he saw. And right now, I'm also listening to the audiobook of the first Secret Machines novel, Tom DeLonge and, you know, all those guys. And they're both really striking and similar in that whole, the military background, what's going on. Yeah, we don't really know. Three body problem stuff is kind of in my head as well. So I like that they've taken that approach of, you know, maybe the government don't know as much as they think they do. And yeah, they're still trying to, like you say, through their eyes, they're still trying to figure this out, which is a nice approach to take. And it also leaves open that, yeah, but what next? Which is always good, both for you and for the reader as well. So yeah, top work. Well done, guys.
Awesome, man. Thank you. And I'm just going to shout out one more person, Derry Fletcher, who does our covers. He's amazing. We found him off of UFO Twitter. And it's just another thing where it's just like we got so much community support, you know, where it wouldn't have been possible without them. And he's become so integral in our work. And this is someone on UFO Twitter that, you know, that we were in contact with and we hit up and he loved the project. And his covers have just been triple A work. You know, we're very excited.
Yeah, he's awesome.
Listen, all those links you discussed before, you can buy it and how you can follow the guys and the work will be underneath the description to this podcast. So go check that out. Thanks for listening early. Thanks to those who listen on the breakdown as well. And make sure you go pick up your copy of Estimate of the Situation. Thanks again for coming on, guys, and speak to you soon.
Thank you, man.
Thanks, Andy. Appreciate it, man.
That is all for this week's show. Thank you very much for listening. Please remember to leave the podcast a review on your chosen platform. You can like, retweet and subscribe. That would all be very much appreciated. The shows are being uploaded onto YouTube as we speak more and more. You can sign up at patreon.com/thatufopodcast to access the shows ad-free as well. Please get in touch on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, thatufopodcast. Of course, on Twitter, it's @UFOUAPAM. And again, folks, as always, keep looking up. You never know what you might see.
It wasn't a tic-tac and not quite a saucer. More like a hubcap designed by Chaucer. A little baroque and quite steampunk, like Alice was playing bass for the Parliament of Funk. The little fucker hovered right outside of my window, and when I shoved out the screen, he made it an issue. I don't think he expected me to see his ass, but I'd had some champagne and smoked a little grass. Meditated game of state full on meta. Can't imagine how it could have been any better. I got to the top of the stairs, and there he was. Like, you awake? I was about to abduct you, cuz. I jumped back and nearly kissed myself, and I climbed out the window after the elf, and I woke up in my bed, and there was something on my head, and everything was weird, and everything was red. And I called out to my boys. They thought this was noise. They thought it was a dream. They thought it was my toys. They thought it was my problems, and they think I should take care of me, and I don't know what it is, because it doesn't really scare me. Tic-tac and not quite.